Everyone, this is Gene Mack, and I'm coming to you on blogtalkradio.com, and you're listening to ComFest Radio, COWMFFEST. And that's brought to you by ComFest Global Community Film Festival, which is located in the St. Lawrence Market area. And this is a film festival about social and cultural issues and dealing with the global community, the international community, the national community, the regional community, which is provincial, and the local community. And they talk about social and cultural issues. That's what it's all about. Now, the film festival will be starting this year in September, as every other year, and it will be between the 12th and 15th of September, and it will be at the Rainbow Cinema. For those of you who know the Rainbow Cinema, it's located, one of them, the one which we will be airing the films we'll be showing, will be at the Rainbow Cinema, which is on Front Street. Now, each year, the festival gives out an award. It's called the Make a Difference Award, the MADA Award, and they're being bestowed on those filmmakers who best demonstrate a capacity to be positive and altering the social status quo in our society. And films are, as I said, international, but we have a local flavor also. We have quite a few local films and quite a few more than I care to number that are international. Now, you're talking with Gene Mack here tonight, and I am talking for Sports Rant. That's my show. I get quite a few calls from people because I hate to tell you this, but a lot of people know my telephone number, and I get a lot of emails because I'm reasonably easy to get in touch with. All you have to do is know how. Okay, tonight, we've had a big week in sports, by the way, a tremendous week in sports, and there's a lot going on the courts, on the rinks, and on the courses. This past week, we'll go to a couple of quickies. In golf, Boo Weekly won the Congressional down in Fort Worth. That's Ben Hogan's tournament. And Kananan won the Indianapolis 500, and everybody knows that's in Indianapolis. And after over a decade of trying, he finally won, and so that's a big thing. And in the D'Italia, the Giro d'Italia, Vincenzo Nibala won, and that's cycling, and that's in Italy. And in other sports, TFC continues their spiral. I think they're 0 for the season. They haven't won a game, and I think it might be 8-0-8-4. They've had 4 or 5 ties. Oh, one big thing happened in sports, in the sport lesser sports that we should talk about quickly, is Rutgers hired a new athletic director. It was a female. Her name is Julia Herman, and she's from University of Tennessee. For those of you who know anything about the U.S. college scene. And the problem is that as soon as she was hired, she was accused of abuse, much like the Rutgers basketball coach was accused. And not only was accused, he was guilty. He was guilty. But I think she is, too. And this happened in 1996. She was coaching the volleyball team. And en masse, her entire team went to the school and to the newspapers to say she was abusing her players. She's also fighting a lawsuit, which I guess Rutgers didn't know about. You know, I think the time is now that they should perhaps look at a new president for the University of Rutgers. I know it's not a big school in the scheme of things, but for the state of New Jersey, it's probably their biggest and their best. and they have a really top flight schedule, and they're one of the better teams. They're moving to a bigger conference. They're moving to the 10, the Big Ten, and you don't start off poorly by hiring the wrong people to lead your athletic program or be the director of your program. So we'll see what happens there. She's denying everything, but of course she would. She just got a new job. She's going to come in and say, yeah, I did wrong, and they're going to keep her. I doubt it. In the world of sports, tonight we're going to talk about NBA basketball. Oh, this is another one of those 30-minute shows. We will not resume one-hour shows until after the NHL and NBA finishes their playoffs. Now, one of the big things we're going to talk about tonight, and I'm going to try to go through all of this as quickly and as best I possibly can, but we're going to talk about the NBA. The NBA is having a great season, and with the winning streak that Miami had, and with San Antonio coming up the way they've done the last few weeks, and by the way, they just took Memphis 4-0. I thought Memphis had a little more mustard in them than they did, but unfortunately, they didn't get a chance to show San Antonio anything. San Antonio was the teacher, and they taught them well. I thought that San Antonio would have trouble with the youth factor. But that wasn't the case. It seems that San Antonio has indoctrinated quite a few young players into their game. By the way, one of their number one draft choices, which is a Canadian, which is Joseph from this region out in Brampton or in the Ontario region. He played not an integral part, but he played a part and played well when he was on the court. So kudos go out to Joseph. One of the big things I've been watching is the lottery draft. Cleveland got the number one draft, number one pick again, and who knows what will happen. Right now, the Raptors are trying to get the general manager of the Denver Nuggets to come because he was formerly with the Toronto Raptors. And they thought if they could convince anyone, they could convince a former Raptor front office guy to show up and see if they could help the Raptors get over the hump. Now, I don't know what you think the hump is, but far as I'm concerned, the Raptors have a long way to go before they can field any kind of team. Colangelo thinks they're one or two players away, but we didn't get a draft this year. Oh, by the way, let me state this, and this is part of the rant that I want to start. Do you realize the guy that's playing so well, Hebert, was a Raptor, was the number one draft choice of the Raptors, and we decided to trade him away because we didn't think he was going to be anything. And right now he's averaging 20-10. With the Pacers, and they are taking Miami to the hilt. And by the hilt, I mean the series is tied 2-2, and it could go either way, although I got my money on the Miami Heat because they got the best basketball player in the world right now. And when you have the best basketball player in the world, everybody else has got to do merely their job, whatever that job is. But we had Hebert. And they got another tough guy by the name of West. And they're playing good down low because that's been the difference in the game right now. Because to be honest with you, the Pacers don't have a backcourt that's of any measure. They got George, who is an all-star, and he's probably their best player. And he's a forward, a small forward. They do stick him out there when they got the smalls on the court, and then he moves to power forward. And they got Hill and Stevenson. And the matchup that's been against George, Hill, and Stevenson is James, Chambers, and Wade. And right now, other than James, the Pacers are winning that battle. Bosch has played like an average player, not the star he's supposed to be. The games they've won, he's played better. The games they've lost, he's been non-existent. By the way, you hurt his ankle the other night. And who knows if he'll be in tomorrow night's game. But if you don't play in tomorrow night's game, you might as well pack up and go home now. There are no hurt people. Basketball is much like hockey that way. When you're in the playoffs and you're in the conference going for your conference championship, you need to show up. Good, bad, indifferent. Hurt, not hurt, almost hurt, maybe hurt, should be hurt. Show up. You got to play. And you got to bring your team the best you got when you show up. Now, West is taking it back to West. West is taking advantage of Hazlitt. Whenever Hazlitt and Battier, that's the power forwards, have played well, Miami's won. Whenever West has played better than them, Pacers have won. It's as simple as that. The teams that have the most and get the most out of their additional players other than their superstars, and to be quite honest with you, Indiana does not have a star. They have George, and he's a new, fresh, up-and-coming basketball player. He made the All-Star team this year. He made the second-team All-Stars. By the way, the first-team All-Stars, if you don't know, was, of course, James and Durant at forward, Chris Paul and Kobe Bryant at guard, and Duncan, the old man, at center. Now, that was the first team. Now, George was on the second team, and he well deserved it. This was his first time this year making it to the All-Star game, and he's played very well, and he should be a big asset going down the stretch. They'll be back in Miami, and I got a feeling Miami will win the next game, but I don't know what will happen in Indiana. Both teams have shown they can win on the other team's court, so it's a toss-up. But it's not a toss-up for me. At the beginning of the season, or at the beginning of the playoffs, I said it would probably be Miami and San Antonio or OKC in the playoffs for the NBA championship. And when OKC lost Westbrook, it became San Antonio for me all the way. Although I did think, or I thought, Memphis would put up a bigger fight. Memphis ran out of gas, or the old guys showed them how to play basketball. Now, getting back to the Denver GM deciding, now he's making $500,000. Now, this is written, so I don't know. You know, we aren't close enough to talk about how much money he makes. He's supposedly, or reportedly, as we would say in the sports world, making $500,000 in Denver. The Raptors are MLSE, the Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, has offered him $2.5 million. That's five times what he's making. And he still has to think about this. That tells me one thing. He's not sure that MLSE is the place to be. Because he's been here, he knows the organization, he knows the people, and when Lewicki, and everyone knows who Lewicki is, he is the president that came from the conglomerate that ran the Lakers and the Galaxy and all those teams out west in Los Angeles, and they won a few championships with him now. When he came, he said that he wanted to change general managers. And he said that by firing Colangelo of his job. You don't fire somebody if you want him to be your man. But he didn't fire him completely. He's standing around somewhere right now, well-dressed, and trying to figure out what he can do with Bargnani. Well, I can tell him what to do with Bargnani, but I don't know he'll fit. But that's neither here nor there. The bottom line is the general manager that they want is contemplating coming to Toronto. Everybody either leaves or contemplates coming to Toronto. Now, you won't get an NBA player in on any of the teams or in the entire league. 8 out of every 10 of them will say how much they love the city of Toronto. So it's not perhaps the city. They'll say how the NBA is a fraternity and all the teams are just about the same, especially when they got good management. Now, that's the issue that is a little suspect or debatable. But the idea that they or teams or people are refusing to come to Toronto, players rather, or GMs are hesitating to come to Toronto is probably due to the fact that MLSE is not the greatest place or the greatest organization to work for. Think about it. There are no other reasons. You know, when you're a GM and you don't have a top flight competitive team, you know you got 4 or 5 years to pull it together. Now, we don't have the best players in the NBA, but we have competent NBA players. We've got Rudy Gay is a good player. And you know, more than 3 or 4 of the other players on the team are the new players like Ross. He's going to be okay. They got enough players to where they should be competitive if they get the right mix of players. And it's not, much like hockey, being competitive is not about having superstars. It's like being a team like the Pacers are, or like Memphis is, or like a couple of other hardworking teams like Utah. You go out there and you teach them how to play fundamental, hardworking basketball. But we'll get back to this in a moment. We're coming to you from Confess Radio, and this is the Confess Global Community Film Festival we're talking about. And if you want to submit a film, all you got to do is contact Confess, and it's COMMFEST.com. You can get to us through that location, and you can find out what films are going to be shown in the festival. You can find out right now at this particular time if you can even submit a film into the festival. But it starts around September the 12th, and it runs through the 15th. And I think the last submission has to be in by the end of July. So if you got something you want to show us or send to us, please contact us, find out where you have to send it to, and I'm sure they'll be happy to see you. Now, back to the sports rant. I was sent a question the other day. I'm going to completely stop talking about basketball because, hey, the playoffs are on and the proof is in the pudding. I think Miami is going to meet up with San Antonio in the championship round of the NBA. And until until Indiana, the Pacers prove me different, I'm sticking to that story. Now, this past week in baseball, we had a few things that happened. Do you realize that the umpire that missed the home run call last week in Oakland made another big blunder? He missed an obvious call versus the Chicago White Sox. And then the sports station I was watching proceeded to show a week worth of bad calls in the MLB, Major League Baseball. And there was at least 20 where it was no doubt a bad call. Now, this makes me wonder, the umpiring in the major leagues, what about it? Is it so bad that Vegas should have a betting line on how many bad calls affect each game? That would be a great betting line. What do you think? You could bet on 2 bad calls affecting the game, or 3 bad calls, or no bad calls. But I bet you'd get just as much play on that as you would on some of the Major League Baseball games. I don't know how much play they get. I know it's a daily thing. But the idea being is that, Bud Selig has got to realize Major League Baseball is in crisis because these guys are missing calls by. See, I saw a play, one of the most horrendous plays I had ever saw. It was a two to six and back to two, and which is a double play. First baseman gets the ball and throws it to the second baseman and or the shortstop, whoever's covering second, and they return the ball back to first base. Now, most times, first baseman can't get there, so the pitcher ends up covering, which is what happened. The pitcher ends up catching the ball. He's nowhere close to first base, but the umpire still throws him out because the first baseman is standing there, sticks out his glove, and it looks like he caught the ball, but he didn't. The pitcher caught the ball. Then he proceeds to run the ball back towards the center of the field and throw it back to another infielder. And the umpire on first base still ain't figured it out. And he said that was a bad call. He realizes it now. What the hell is going on? What lunatic is running this asylum? I tell you, I have never seen. That's the worst call I ever saw. And this takes precedence over Angel. And Angel made the second worst call I've seen. Well, no. The second worst call I've ever seen was the guy getting robbed of a no-hitter last year or the year before last. That's the worst call I've ever seen. You know? But there have been so many bad calls that they're now having footage of all the bad calls. And they're being shown on major sports network. Can you imagine what would happen if people stopped betting in numbers on high numbers on baseball because the umpiring is so bad? It's so bad they look like they're cheating. That's how bad it is. But we'll see. I know Bud better pick up his socks. And the call on the double play was so bad, it reminded me, and let's give kudos and shout outs to Kerry Fraser. Kerry Fraser made the worst call for Maple Leaf Country or the province of Ontario I've ever seen, and that was in 93 when the Leafs were on their way to the Stanley Cup, and Wayne Gretzky decided to use his stick on Gilmore, and no call was made. And since then, old Happy Hair, we call him Happy Hair here because he's got the happiest hair of anybody I've ever seen. But that's neither here nor there. These calls that they're making right now are Fraser-esque. And if you don't know what I mean, think about it. They're Fraser-esque. That's how bad they are. But another thing happened, and I got some email on this. What is happening to Brett Laurie? Let me explain. I told you a month ago, at the beginning of the season, when a ball went between Brett Laurie's hands. He threw up his hands like he was going to catch a line drive. It went between his left and right hand, right over his head, and he never made a play on the ball. And if he is quick enough to stick his hands up and catch the ball. But he didn't. And a lot of other things. They say he's high strung. They say he's emotional. They say his motor is always running. They say he's a self-starter. Those are all phrases for one thing: hyperactivity. When people are hyperactive. And I said this a long time ago at the beginning of the season. Brett Laurie has ADHD or ADD, attention deficit disorder. This guy, you remember when we were all little and we played Little League Baseball and you had this kid and you told him when he got to first base, whenever the catcher misses the ball, you run the sucker. And the kid would take off running the sucker, and when he got the sucker, he wouldn't stop. He'd round the bag and go to third. And when he's running on the way to third, they'd pick up the ball because they dropped it or threw it away and throw it to third, and then it would be thrown away again. But the kid never stopped at third. He just kept on motoring around the home plate. And it's like he scores, and everybody wondered, wow, why didn't he stop to see where the ball was? Well, Brett Laurie is that kind of kid. Boy, you turn him on, you can't turn him off. You know, you get him started, you can't stop it. And it's like last year in the dugout. He was giving high fives that was so hard, people stopped wanting to give him high fives because he was hurting them. He was hurting them. You know, the other day he comes up on a play where he's supposed to be trying to drive in the tying run or another run for the Jays. He hits a medium range sacrifice fly, and Lynn, who is slow as Christmas, but that's neither here nor there. He's on base, and he doesn't tag up and try to score. And Laurie comes back arguing, much like he argued with the umpire that on calls and strikes. And much like he, when he wasn't arguing, he took off his gloves, threw his glove, threw his bat, threw his batting helmet, threw the other glove, and walks away. And then he gets thrown out the game, and he says he don't know why. Is he stupid? He don't know why? Or does he think everybody else is stupid? They got a personal keeper for him, a mentor, DeRosa. He's his personal keeper. And, you know, that's because he's a kid's a good athlete, although he's below the Mendoza line. And for those of you in Texas, the Mendoza line is when you can't hit your weight. Now, he's got to weigh under 200 at least. But he's batting under 200. So go figure. Is he ready? He's 23, 24 years old. He might be even 26, but I think he's 23, 24. And I don't know if he's ready. And I know he has, high strung issues, we'll call them. He's high strung. And anyone who's high strung reacts before they think. And who knows if he is even thinking properly. But that's neither here nor there. Tonight, a big series goes to its final game seven. And that is where the Detroit Pistons will play the Chicago Blackhawks. And that's going to be a great one, ladies and gentlemen. You got to get out there to watch. L.A. last night won the Western Conference. And by the way, a young man by the name of Justin Williams continued his seventh game heroics. In seven game series, in all seven of them, he scored at least a goal in seven straight game sevens. And that we should give him a cape and a mask, because that's heroic stuff he's doing, man. When you score goals in game seven, you're showing everybody you're ready to play. And Justin Williams, he's not a big scorer. In during the regular season, he might have scored 8 or 9, 10 at the most, no more than 12 or 15 this year. But in the playoffs, you know, when game 7 comes along, he's as bad as Big Bob. And who is Big Bob? Big Shot Bob. Big Shot Bob Ory. Hey, man, when he was with the Lakers, whenever they had to win an important game 7, Big Shot Bob came up big time. And Justin Williams came up big time last night. And there are a lot of other people who come up big time, but they came up big time during the regular season also. But Bob Ory and Justin Williams have one thing in common. They can score when it counts the most. You know, and that's an important thing. So we're going to say prayers and give thanks to TFC. The TFC, maybe they'll win one this year if we pray hard enough and wish long enough, they'll maybe get it done. Now, one other thing I'd like to say, kudos to Ottawa, but the problem was that they bought back Spezza and Carlson, and they should have let them sit out, because those guys who weren't as big of stars and who weren't as talented and who weren't as skillful played with more grit and determination than those other guys. And I think they would have done at least as well if those Spezza and Carlson had been sitting on the sideline. But that's neither here nor there. It's hard to beat the Penguins. Oh, by the way, when the World Juniors were playing, I told you about a kid named Druin, and I only saw him skate one shift. And now I think him and McKinnon, and Jones are the top three possibilities for being the top pick in the NHL draft. Well, it's been another big night, and I hope you all have fun, and I hope you get out to see Detroit and Chicago. But if you don't, find something to listen to that involves sports. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good weekend and enjoy yourselves.